That sound and theme announces the beginning of the Great Scale Model Train Shows podcast, which we produce to keep you informed about our train shows and related information you may find useful, edifying, or entertaining. I'm Scott Gear, co-owner of the shows, with my partner, Mike Militello. Today, June 26, I want to bring you up to date on how we are dealing with COVID-19, the pandemic. The situation you face personally depends to a great extent on the severity of the outbreak in your area, and the extent to which local and state governments have allowed some return to normalcy. For train show people, there is some good news. The state of Maryland has successfully reduced the rate of infection, hospitalizations, and deaths owing to COVID. As Governor Larry Hogan has suggested, we are by no means out of the woods, but we are moving in the right direction. Closely controlled and carefully observed reopenings of commercial activity is taking place in so-called phases. In this way, any change for the worse may be promptly addressed if and when it occurs. I like the little engine that could. I think I can. One step at a time, one foot in front of the other. The Maryland governor's latest executive order, issued June 10, has expanded on the order issued just 1 week before. Many named enterprises, such as casinos and bingo halls, were allowed to reopen, with restrictions including lower crowd loads, distancing, face masks, and similar. With respect to recreational enterprises generally, the order allows, and I quote from the order, quote, "the indoor areas of any establishments that are subject to the admission and amusement tax under the Maryland Code," unquote. That appears to me, and I stress, appears to me, to allow the possibility of opening the exhibition halls at the fairgrounds and the train show in particular. Of course, any given venue may be subject to restrictions specifically applying to it. In addition, local laws and regulations take precedence over state mandates. In fact, the fairgrounds management and other large hosts are currently in discussions with the state to learn the specific protocols they must follow. And likewise, I am in frequent contact with the fairgrounds myself. While the train show is located in Maryland, our footprint includes nearby areas of Pennsylvania, Delaware, Virginia, and West Virginia, where most of you are located. Positive news there, too. According to the New York Times COVID database, infection rates and deaths are either declining or flat in those states as of today, the 26th of June. Of course, any of this can change at any time, as we know from the dreary setbacks we've seen in Texas, Florida, and California. Don't count your chickens before they hatch. The fact that we, or any business, is allowed to open does not mean that we, or any other business, actually should open. The calculus for that will be based on our own estimate of public safety and our ability to effectively enforce restrictions and protocols prevailing on show management. Bottom line, I'm more interested in doing the right thing as opposed to doing the merely lawful thing. Now, let me turn to some of the questions I've received from you good folks. Bill from Harrisburg wrote to ask, "Will vendors who need to cancel their table reservation for the October 3rd and 4th show forfeit their payment for those tables?" No, Bill, not to worry. Reservations will be moved to a future show, or if the dealer is out of business for keeps, the money will be refunded upon request. Now, Sarah from Upper Marlboro, Maryland, has asked, if crowd capacity limits are lowered, will you need to rearrange the floor plan for vendors or limit the number of tables and space for layouts? Good question, Sarah. And the answer is a big maybe. The nominal capacity for the Cow Palace is 7,000 souls. If the restriction is 50%, that number changes to 3,500, obviously. Our attendance numbers are close to or slightly exceed that figure. But that's just attendees. When dealers and helpers and staff and layout operators and food service people and everyone else is tossed in, we already have a problem. But that's not the only issue. It is entirely possible that placement of tables will need to be changed to conform to whatever distancing requirements may be in force. For example, Sarah, a 5-foot-wide aisle now complies with fire safety rules, but it might be deemed a violation of the now current 6-foot distancing because of COVID. Likewise, a similar 6-foot separation between vendor table areas may also be required. The vendor to your left, 6 feet away, the vendor to your right, 6 feet away, the vendor across, 6 feet, etc., etc. And likewise, again, hand washing stations along the walls, which we normally ignore, may need to be made accessible. We just don't know yet what the requirements will be. So all of this is pure speculation for now. Even so, we must imagine every possible scenario and sketch out all the workarounds to comply. And when we know, you will know. That brings us to Harold from York, Pennsylvania, who asks, will the show require people to wear masks? Will the show provide hand sanitizers and masks? How will you handle shortages? Again, thank you, Harold. That's a good question. Yes, we will provide sanitizer dispensers or some equivalent here and there and keep a supply of masks for those who need them. We currently plan to do so even if the state no longer requires these measures. As to the shortages, it now appears that supplies are adequate, albeit local shortages may temporarily exist. And that said, I can tell you that within a few days of the national shutdown and reports of short supplies in the early going of this COVID thing, I was absolutely bombarded with offers from Chinese manufacturers to sell us what we needed. I will confess to some inappropriate ethnic bias here, but given that the source of the scourge and the source of the masks was the same, I was, I will admit, a bit nervous about placing an order. Now this from Betty in Richmond, Virginia. If someone refuses to observe precautions, what will you do? Well, Betty, violators will be ejected, period, out of here. Given that our security includes state police officers, criminal arrest is not out of the question either. Folks, don't test us on this. Now, I have numbers of emails asking, what have you done to estimate how COVID might affect the number of attendees or dealers who will come to the show? It's another good question. About 6 weeks ago, we polled all our constituencies to get some idea of the impact of COVID on attendance. About half of the respondents said they would definitely or probably attend. About a third said definitely not or probably not. Everyone else was sort of spread out somewhere in between. We'll run that poll again in a few weeks. And think about it, even if the coast is clear come October, it wouldn't do much good to hold a show where nobody came, would it? Now, some vendors and attendees have sent emails asking about a virtual show. They ask, forgetting about the next physical show, have you thought about a virtual train show online? Yeah, online is all the rage these days, isn't it? Yes, we are thinking about it, and demand appears to be growing. I hope more people will express interest and give us ideas about how such a show would work. Contact me, please. Finally, this question about the seriousness of the pandemic and possible overreaction to it. Is it really as bad as reported? I've heard that numbers are overreported, many deaths assigned to COVID are from something else, and politics plays a big role. Where are you getting your information? What's the truth? Well, that's a tough one. Fake news. Okay, our principal sources of information are the statistics reported by Johns Hopkins University, the World Health Organization, and the health departments of Maryland and nearby states. We consult these sources several times during the week. It is true, especially for seniors, that multiple causes contribute to a death or enduring illness. That said, the numbers generally, and the science which has identified the presence of the virus and the way it works, is, in our opinion, more reliable than not. And in some sense, finding abuses in the reporting probably doesn't make any difference, really. The simple facts are, one, governments have reacted, as we have seen, and two, the public at large has exhibited great anxiety and caution. That's the reality with which we must contend, and our adaptation is based on that reality. As I have previously said, friends, we'll get it wrong sometimes, but at least we'll get it wrong honestly. And speaking of adaptations, this little podcast is an example. One of the joys of running this operation I miss most is the frequent interactions with you good people, in person or by phone. These exchanges make everything direct and personal. We've come to know each other this way. So by sending you my voice, I hope to recreate this kind of contact experience, personal. And let's be honest about this. Our shared avocation about these little things we build or watch or operate is not just about those little things. No. People, I believe we are connected with one another by our love of and fascination with worlds of our own creation. Worlds which so often depict life as it could be or should be. And now, today, at this moment, we are confronted with conforming the real world to what we most hope it will become. I wish you all well. Thanks for listening. And wash your hands.